I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm John Morgan.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. This is the first of our weekly podcasts for 2020. And we are going to talk about Martin Scorsese's recent film, The Irishman. A couple of years ago, around the same time actually, John and I talked about Scorsese's film Silence. I think that was about 3 years ago. And we thought it would be a good opportunity to do another film podcast by talking about The Irishman. Both of us have seen it. John has reviewed it for Countercurrents. It's also been reprinted at uns.com. So John, I'd like you to start out because you've actually written about this, and then I'll just sort of chime in occasionally when I have some thoughts, and I think we'll probably have a pretty good discussion.
Okay. Well, I was excited to see it at first because, you know, I've loved Scorsese for a long time. I mean, I think anybody, you know, especially people who come over to the right have loved Scorsese's early films like Taxi Driver and Raging Bull and so on. And I wouldn't say that I think that all of his films have been great, but he's certainly made some of the greatest films of the last half century. You know, I would include The Last Temptation of Christ and, of course, Goodfellas and Casino. And, you know, he is an extremely good filmmaker, but I saw this in the theater, I should say. I was lucky enough to be able to actually view it in a theater rather than on television. I was disappointed, I have to say. I mean, it wasn't a terrible film, but, you know, from Scorsese, where you expect something great, I thought it was quite run-of-the-mill, and he repeated both himself and other film directors, too. I can maybe talk a little bit more about that later. But it just a lot of it just felt like it was something that I'd seen before in Scorsese's earlier crime films and in other mafia-related films. The cast, of course, is amazing as well, but it was kind of the same for them. I would say of all the regulars, you know, in Scorsese's films who returned, Joe Pesci, I think, was the best, although, I mean, he also had the least to do because he was just playing an Italian gangster, which is exactly what he plays in every other Scorsese film he's been in. You know, whereas Al Pacino actually had, he should have done, I think, more of a job of playing the German-Irish Jimmy Hoffa. And, you know, he did make some effort, I thought, to tone himself down. But overall, I felt like his performance was very similar to every other film he's been in the last 30 years when, you know, he's kind of that same character from Scent of a Woman, you know, like kind of acting bizarrely at times. And I just didn't find him that believable as Jimmy Hoffa. I mean, Robert De Niro was okay, but it was the same thing where you feel like it's similar to things you've seen before. And if you actually, I mean, his character through whose eyes, you know, you see the film, because the entire film is told in retrospect, you know, where Sheeran, who was an actual person who worked for Jimmy Hoffa, is telling the story in old age, which I guess is a nod to the fact that the story itself is taken from a book called I Heard You Paint Houses, which was published after Sheeran's death by a biographer who claimed that he based the book on conversations he had with Sheeran. But of course, since the book was published after Sheeran's death, we have no way of knowing how close, you know, how much of it actually came out of Sheeran's mouth. And even if it did, we don't know how much of it is actually true, right? I haven't read the book, but from what I've heard, parts of it have been corroborated and other parts of it have been challenged by people who were there at the time, people who knew some of the personas involved. So I don't know. Robert De Niro gave a good performance, I thought, but it was very similar to things he's done before. So overall, I don't know. I mean, I was never bored. I mean, I never felt like walking out of the film. You know, it was entertaining enough for me to sit there for 3.5 hours. But, you know, I don't think I'll ever see it again. And I if I was to recommend Scorsese's greatest films to somebody, I certainly wouldn't mention The Irishman.
Right. Yeah, my feelings are pretty much the same as yours. The Irishman is a biographical pick. He does great biopics. I think his best is The Aviator about Howard Hughes. But it's about a minor mobster, this Irish descended guy, Frank Sheeran, played by Robert De Niro. And it goes through his life from, I guess, his 30s or 40s into his 80s or so. De Niro is pushing 80 now, and so this movie should have been done 20 years ago, because it's always easier to age an actor than to de-age an actor.
Well, they made a big deal out of the digital de-aging, and they did a decent job, but they still couldn't hide the fact that when the characters were moving, they very much moved like old men, even when they were, you know, it was like in the 1950s and they were, should have been in their 30s and 40s or whatever they were.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the things that I liked about it and didn't like about it are basically the following. First of all, I liked how it was such a meticulous and loving reconstruction of part of American history, especially sort of middle class and lower middle class, working class American everything, decor, cars, clothes, roadside amenities, hotels and stuff like that from the 1950s into the 1970s. It's like, wow, this is fascinating. It is meticulous, and it is an era that we're well rid of. It was just sort of aesthetically about as beautiful as an avocado-colored refrigerator, and it was kind of remarkable how much work went into just creating that feel. And I kind of have to give them thumbs up for it. I also thought that of the performances, only really Al Pacino was outstanding to me. Only he really stood out. And when Jimmy Hoffa, the labor leader, the Teamsters leader, who later got involved in the mob and then ended up being murdered by them in all likelihood, when he became part of the story, suddenly this movie really took off for me. It became really compelling. And I was wishing about halfway through that Scorsese had simply made a Jimmy Hoffa biopic.
Yes, I agree.
Maybe not with Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa. Maybe he could have gotten Leonardo DiCaprio, who's about the right age and could be aged a bit, and I think has done outstanding work in so many films by Scorsese. I would have loved to have seen a Jimmy Hoffa biopic like The Aviator, which I thought was a magnificent film, a really inspiring film, a fascinating film, and a film about somebody of genuine greatness with tragic problems. And that's, of course, true of Jimmy Hoffa. There's many things about Jimmy Hoffa that were genuinely heroic and great. And you get some of that feel from one scene in The Irishman. Pacino is making a speech, just talking about fighting for the rights of working people, and I found that to be totally compelling. I would have loved a Jimmy Hoffa biopic from Martin Scorsese, but this was a movie about a historical bit player, a kind of sociopathic nullity, this Sheeran guy, and it began with Sheeran. Hoffa came into it. Hoffa ends up being murdered. And then it's more Sheeran. Sheeran goes to jail. Sheeran gets old. Sheeran's in a nursing home. The last 40 minutes of the movie were just about these guys getting really, really old and dying. And I just thought it was depressing and kind of pointless. And at that point, I really started getting bored. Now, I watched it on Netflix. And so I didn't have to see it for 3 hours and 42 minutes or however long it was in a theater. So I took it in small doses. But even though I took it in small doses, I was really starting to get antsy near the end. Although at the very end, when Sheeran is being talked to by this priest, you get a sense of the sort of karmic retribution that this guy has faced for the life that he's led. But it really could be a lot more. It really lacks pathos to me. It could have been done much better. But honestly, it's just a life that doesn't deserve a 3 hour and 42-minute or however long movie. It just didn't rise to that level of cinematic treatment. And this was highlighted for me by the fact that Hoffa was at the core of it and was such a compelling figure. I just wish it was were a Jimmy Hoffa movie.
Which, of course, there was a Jimmy Hoffa biopic back in 1992, actually directed by Danny DeVito, believe it or not. I mean, it's not a very good film, but I would say as a depiction of Jimmy Hoffa, it's better because the story focuses on him. And you know, like I wrote about in my review, one of my problems with The Irishman is that you don't even meet Jimmy Hoffa until he's already very well established. And the film never really goes into why he was such an important person in American labor history. You know, there's that one line that De Niro as Sheeran gives in the narrative where he says, well, in the 50s, he was like Elvis. And in the 60s, he was like the Beatles. But I mean, that's a funny line, but it's an oversimplification. And most people seeing this film really won't know anything about the rise of the Teamsters or what impact they had on America. So I think Hoffa, for all its flaws, is a better film as a biopic only because, you know, you actually see his rise to greatness and you get to see, what he did for American workers. And, you know, in that sense, it's a much more complete story. In fact, it's interesting because in that film, Danny DeVito himself plays a character who's sort of Hoffa's right-hand man. But in that film, he's fictional. And in this film, they decided to go with the same device, but, you know, base it on a real person. Although I've heard it challenged that some people who knew both of them questioned whether Sheeran was really as closely involved with Hoffa as it's made out in the film. So, you know, that's something that's unclear. But about the last 40 minutes, I found that interesting mainly because it transcended what Scorsese had done before in you know, like Goodfellas and Casino, because one of the distinguishing things about those films is that the main characters never regret what they did. Like, you know, Goodfellas ends with that last shot with what is the main character's name in that? It's been a while since I saw it. He's been put in witness protection and he comes out of the house. And he's like, oh, great. I get to live the rest of my life like a schnook. And his only regret is that he was forced out of the mobster life.
Right.
And, you know, it's the same in Casino. You never get any sense that these characters have any moral regrets or reflections about what they did. So I kind of thought it was interesting in this one where you actually get to see a man struggling with the consequences of his actions. I mean, he's torn apart by two things. I mean, one is, of course, the fact that he betrayed his very good friend, Jimmy Hoffa, by killing him, even though he was kind of maneuvered into it. But he did do it. And the other thing, which I felt like the film didn't earn the payoff, but it was still interesting to see, he had a daughter who got very close to Hoffa and kind of saw him as a father figure since Sheeran, was kind of scary to her and off-putting. So she saw Hoffa as a sort of father figure, and she's always suspected that her father was involved in his death. So as a result, they've become alienated. So you see De Niro, you know, kind of destroyed by this life that he's lived. And I thought that was interesting as it crossed over into territory that he deals with in his more spiritual films. I mean, not in nearly the same depth, but I can see why you thought it was tedious, but I thought there was an element to it that was interesting that went beyond something that any mafia film I could think of has done before, you know, just by showing him kind of struggling with the consequences of what he's done. Sheeran himself, I mean, I guess we have to assume he's a reliable narrator. When my review is posted on, some people raise the possibility that you're supposed to see it as, you know, that maybe Sheeran's exaggerating and so on. And that may be true, but there's no indication of that in the film. So I think we just have to take it at face value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really think that there was enough of a real moral person there. He struck me as kind of a sociopathic cold fish. I didn't like the guy at all. I didn't think there was anything remotely noble about him. And I just kind of found him a repellent character, and I pitied poor Jimmy Hoffa for being friends with this guy. Well, and really for getting to be friends with all these mobsters. I mean, it was a mistake on his part, obviously. And one thing that really I came away from this movie with is just a very sad feeling about how utterly corrupt America is. Mm-hmm. You know, the labor unions, the political process. Americans preen about, oh, how we're a nation ruled by law, and we have these journalists talking about, oh, Putin is corrupt and elections are corrupt and et cetera, et cetera.
And Orban is not, you know, not permitting the rule of law in Hungary. That's another
thing. Yeah, that rubbish. And yet the United States in the 20th century had foreign policy dictated by the mafia. It had presidential elections stolen by the mafia. It had the labor movement corrupted and rotted by the mafia. The United States is a very, very corrupt society. And you know that all those vast fortunes that were being built up through criminal activities still exist. And these people's children and grandchildren, their heirs and, you know, in the legal sense and so forth, they still have a huge amount of power in the United States. The United States is a very corrupt country. And I didn't really see anything even slightly critical about that in Scorsese's treatment of this. There was no sense that this is no way to run a country. And that really kind of bothered me. It bothered me tremendously, actually. It just made me kind of sad, and it fit in with the moral deadness, the moral imbecility of this Frank Sheeran guy. I felt that there was something lacking at the moral core of this film, except for very, very faint, you know, straining at the end to try and show how pitiful this Sheeran's life had become, how much he had lost, etc. But I didn't get the feeling that his soul was really simmering or suffering. In fact, I kind of got the feeling that he enjoyed, near the end of his life, the attention that people were paying to him about his crimes. And the very end of the movie is when the priest leaves, he says, just leave the door open a little bit, right? He doesn't want to be left alone. He doesn't want to be totally isolated. And, I mean, part of that could be just he's an old man in a nursing home and he doesn't want to be shut away. But there's an element of just attention seeking that I thought he was enjoying near the end of his life, because that was the only way he was getting any attention. Was to be this old gangster that people were courting to try and wheedle information out of. So there was a kind of charade-like quality of that at the end that kind of bothered me.
Well, about the corruption, I felt like it's just become so accepted in American mainstream society now that Scorsese didn't even feel the need to deal with it. I mean, I've heard that story about the mafia helping JFK to win Chicago. I mean, for decades, that's not a new idea. But it was interesting to actually see it played out on the screen as though it was just an ordinary way of doing business.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure what to make of the whole. I mean, they very, very strongly imply that Hoffa was involved in Kennedy's murder. I mean, they don't make it explicit, but they stopped just short of that.
Yeah.
And I was glad that they kind of, after that part of the film, they never really referenced back to it again, which I was glad about, because I know there's ample evidence that there was some sort of a conspiracy behind JFK's assassination, but I don't think the consensus is that it was the mafia. who's behind it. I know that's one that's been put forward, but that seems like it's getting into tinfoil hat territory to think that, you know, Jimmy Hoffa had JFK killed. You know, I don't think he had that kind of power and influence at that time that he could have achieved something like that.
Yeah, and he didn't really have the motive, I thought, either. It is very, very clear that the Kennedys were very much involved with the mafia. I mean, Joseph mm-hmm. Kennedy was very much involved with the mafia, and he basically got them to fix the election. JFK became president because the mafia stole the election in the state of Illinois, specifically mm-hmm. in the city of Chicago. Nixon was robbed. Now, it is true that Jimmy Hoffa was a Nixon supporter, which is kind of interesting given the general left-leaning quality of the labor movement. And I'd like to know more about that. But it is also true that the relationship between Robert Kennedy and Hoffa was very bad. You know, Robert Kennedy had a sort of a vendetta against him, but I don't see any reason to think that that Hoffa had anything to do with the killing. Now, a lot of Hoffa's associates were very much involved, though, with the Kennedy administration and very much involved with Kennedy's policies towards Cuba. The quid pro quo for electing Kennedy, for stealing the election, was for Kennedy to overthrow Castro so the mafia could take back control of their empire, which they lost in Cuba. And it was these Cuban exile groups and the groups that were working to overthrow Castro. That is where the sort of mafia world and the mafia underworld intersects with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Right, which of course in Oliver Stone's JFK, you know, he goes into all this, and in fact Joe Pesci is David Ferry, who's one of the he's just an incidental character in The Irishman.
Yeah, but I thought that was hilarious that Joe Pesci in The Irishman says, "Now you're going to meet a fairy named Ferry."
Yes.
and that was the guy that he played in JFK. So that was kind of a little Easter egg that I enjoyed. It was clear that Oswald was not cooperating with the mafia. He was there because he was a communist who was trying to infiltrate what these people were doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the idea that the mob was behind Kennedy's downfall, I think, is getting into tinfoil hat territory. I think it was the communists, basically. It was a communist hit against him. And the mafia was very much on the side of John F. Kennedy, and he was very much on their side. So, yeah, the implication that they were involved in this, and there's another implication where one of these mobsters says this, or I think Joe Pesci's repeating it, that, you know, if a president can be assassinated, so can a union president, which almost implies that the same people were doing the assassinating. But I just find that to be somewhat dubious.
Yeah, very much so. And I'm glad that the film didn't end up focusing on that. I guess they put that in there because they felt like it would make the film more interesting to people, since, you know, the Kennedy assassination is something that everybody knows about.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. That's a part of the film they could have done without. But.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting, the kind of stuff that sort of the classic Hollywood liberal types want to just cover up. Is in there. This business about the mafia working to get Kennedy elected is in there. And the mafia basically determining U.S. foreign policy towards Cuba is in there. And that's mm-hmm. the kind of stuff that, you know, the hagiography of JFK tries to sweep under the rug. So I thought that was kind of gutsy on Scorsese's
part to troop
that out.
Yeah, and I mean, they couldn't have done a biopic without going into that, and also, you know, his contentious relationship with Robert Kennedy, which is also very well documented. And I'm sure there is an answer to this, although they didn't mention it in the film. But for me, I could not figure out why Hoffa would have wanted to support the guy who was running against the person who his allies in the mafia were supporting. And I'm sure that the people who, you know, have researched this, there probably is an explanation, but in the film, it just seemed very odd to me why they would be at loggerheads that way. You would think they would want to be all moving in the same direction.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be a natural for a union head to support the Democratic Party guy for president. That is interesting, and it shows, at the very least, one trait of Hoffa that eventually got him killed, which is just his contrarianism.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's very I think that's documented, too. And I think, quite honestly, you know, again, the DeVito Hoffa film is very flawed. But I feel like if you watch video of Hoffa, and there's plenty of that on YouTube, and I mean of the historical Hoffa, and you watch Jack Nicholson's performance, I think he really comes closer to the mark. I wouldn't say that Al Pacino gave a bad performance, but that scene when they're in the cafe and, you know, he's supposed to be making peace with what was the mobster's name who he was in prison with?
Yeah, I can't think of the guy's name.
But that whole scene, I mean, everyone laughs. And yeah, it is a funny scene, but to me, in that scene, Pacino's not acting like Jimmy Hoffa. He's acting like Al Pacino. You know, it felt more like a mafia scene than like a historical scene.
Right.
mafia film scene, I should say.
He played it in a kind of ethnic Italian way, I thought.
He didn't really try to hide his accent very much.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jimmy Hoffa lived his entire, well, he was born in Indiana, and he lived almost his entire life in Michigan after that. So if you listen to him, he did not have a New York accent. He very much spoke like a Midwesterner.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it a little bit hard to believe for me as somebody who used to live in Michigan. I'll just mention I've actually been to the Red Fox where Hoffa disappeared. if you live in Michigan, you have to take a pilgrimage there at some point to see where Hoffa disappeared. That's probably like the whole basis of their business at this point.
That's interesting. I had no idea. Yeah, I guess it shouldn't surprise me that would be part of it, given how meticulously historical the film feels.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you compare this to some of Scorsese's other works? I mean, for one thing, he's done quite a lot of gangster films. There's
yes.
Goodfellas, there's Casino, and there's Gangs of New York, which is a different kind of gangster film.
And The Departed.
The Departed, awesome. Yeah, another gangster film. I think this is close to The Departed, which for me sort of felt like a failed film as well, a kind of overlong film. There are too many characters that looked alike. It just kind of left me cold. And I kind of would have to say that this ranks near the bottom of Scorsese's work.
Yeah, for me too. In fact, offhand, I can't think of anything that I think is worse than this.
Yeah.
And granted, a bad film from Scorsese is still better than 90% of what Hollywood's turning out these days. But still, in his career as a whole, I don't think it ranks highly. Maybe, you know, over some of his early films.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it.
Yeah, it's not a terrible film. It's just kind of a tedious and disappointing film. It could have been better. It could have been shorter. I think it could have been shorter. But I think in some ways it's just sort of fundamentally conceptually flawed. If he had made it 20 years earlier and made it an hour shorter, it might have been a very much better film.
Yes.
But I kept wanting to see a Martin Scorsese, Jimmy Hoffa biopic, and that wasn't what I was getting. And that is really what sort of gelled my dissatisfaction with it. When the Hoffa stuff became more and more compelling, and the character of Hoffa seemed more and more compelling, and these other guys, they just seemed so, they seemed bland, and they seemed one-dimensional. They didn't have much personality to them. And or charisma. I mean, most criminals are not charismatic geniuses in any sense of the word, and that certainly comes across here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that Scorsese wanted to make another mafia film, and the Hoffa stuff is almost incidental. I mean, I don't really know why he selected this text. I read an interview with Robert De Niro where he was talking about the fact that, you know, Joe Pesci retired from acting many years ago, came out of retirement just to do this film. And he was describing why, or he was describing how he persuaded Pesci to do it again. And he said originally Pesci was like, no, you know, I don't want to come back. I'm done with all that. And De Niro said, yeah, but you know, when, you know, this might be the last thing we ever get. And that's kind of how the whole film feels to me. It's like Scorsese knows this is probably the last mafia film he's ever going to make. He might make some other films. And, you know, De Niro and Pacino and Pesci and Harvey Keitel and all of them, I think they know this is the last time they're ever going to get to play mobsters. So that seems to me like the real point of this whole exercise. And everything else is just kind of like window dressing, unfortunately, because, you know, like we've both been saying, Hoffa deserves better.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, though, because, I mean, Scorsese's last film, Silence, I thought was very good. I didn't think it seemed tired or repetitious at all. I mean, it might not be to everybody's tastes because it's very slow and long. But if you like films about religious problems, I think it's an excellent film.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I would put it in the top third of his films, mm-hmm. definitely. It's not one of his greatest films, but it's a very good film, and it's a film that I've watched again since I originally saw it in the theater, and I cannot say that I will ever rewatch The Irishman. It just doesn't draw me back.
No, I really don't think I will either. Yeah, I think he just wanted to make his last mafia film. I think if you really, I mean, the reason why he focuses on Sheeran is that if we had to identify what Scorsese wanted to do, it was this dilemma of Sheeran's about staying silent. It seems like the whole film is a build up to that. And it's interesting because in the voiceovers, we never really find out why Sheeran doesn't ultimately confess. You know, I have my own theory. I think it was on Uns after my review was published, said this might be the actual explanation, which is that Sheeran might be worried that if he confesses, even I think it was the last time the FBI interviewed him was 2003, or maybe it was 2002, just before his death, that there were still people connected to the Buffalino family who might take it out either on him or on his children or something. That's possible. I thought it was because towards the end, they make such a big deal out of his alienation from his youngest daughter. And I thought it was because he knew that if she found out that he really was the one who pulled the trigger, that, you know, she would never want to have anything to do with him again. And he knows that. That was my theory. I don't know. Did you have any particular feeling about that?
No, I think that's a plausible theory. Definitely. Yeah.
Either that or he's some kind of like Spenglerian, you know, like the Roman guard at the gates in Pompeii. And he just won't leave his post even after everyone else is dead. I don't know.
He doesn't want to tell. And if he doesn't tell, what happens? People keep asking him. He might just have enjoyed the attention, right? But yeah, I mean, there were lots of reasons why he wouldn't have wanted to reveal the truth about this. It could have had negative consequences for his family. It could have had negative consequences for him. And also, you know, I think he just kind of enjoyed the cat and mouse game. So all those would be sufficient reasons, I guess. I'm trying to think of what I believe are the very best films by Scorsese. I would have to say that Gangs of New York is my favorite of his films.
That's a very good one.
Yeah. I would put The Aviator up near the very top. I would put Taxi Driver up near the very, very top. The Last Temptation of Christ has flaws, but it's still an extraordinarily ambitious, artful film. I would put Kundun up there. And the pattern is that a lot of the gangster films, you know, the films like Casino and Goodfellas they're not my favorites, to be perfectly honest. I think Goodfellas and Casino are definitely the best by far of his gangster films. If you know, the sort of Italian mafia films, Gangs of New York is a different kind of film, but it is a gangster film.
Yeah, I mean, well, I would have to go with Taxi Driver for myself. Every time I think I first saw that film when I was 19, which is a good age to see it. when you're young and angsty, that film does a good job of articulating it. And even when I've watched it since then, I can relate to it less, but I still just see it as an amazing work of art. And Last Temptation of Christ, Raging Bull. I've always liked Mean Streets. That was his first gangster film. What else is there? Well, I would have to put Silence up there. I think it wouldn't be at the top, but and Gangs of New York, of course, that's a great one. I have to confess, I have not seen The Aviator yet.
Oh, my!
I'll have to remedy that one.
Yeah, you'll definitely have to remedy that. I think it's a tremendously impressive film. It has the feel of a kind of it's almost a kind of Ayn Randian sort of feel to it in it being a tribute to an industrialist.
Yes.
An industrialist, an inventor, a pioneer in both movie making and in aviation, who ends up going up against the government and beating them. And, you know, of course, he's a tragic figure because he's got these psychological issues that sort of crippled him. And, of course, you just see the beginnings of that at the end of The Aviator. It's really a movie that ends on a note of triumph. But, yeah, it's a tremendously inspiring film about, you know, a heroic individual and somebody who's genuinely admirable. And that's what I would have loved to have seen about Hoffa, too, because I do find him to be a genuinely admirable person who, like many people, you know, the definition of tragedy is that it narrates the downfall of somebody who's good because of their flaws. And Hoffa definitely had good traits, which makes his life tragic in a genuine sense. I would have loved to have seen that. Sort of mid-level films by Scorsese, let me think. Well, The Color of Money is a fine film, but it's not a fantastic film. Cape Fear is
it's okay.
Yeah, The Age of Innocence, we're sort of getting in the middling ground.
Yeah, I really didn't like that one. That I found that incredibly boring. Maybe I saw it when I was a university student when it first came out. Maybe I'd like it more if I saw it today.
You know, another biopic that he did that I thought was tremendously compelling and absolutely hilarious is The Wolf of Wall Street. That's almost a gangster film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I almost forgot about that. Almost. Yeah. Well, in the sense that Wall Street is almost a mafia.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But that really is, for me, near the top of his canon, too. I just think it's a tremendously good film. And it's definitely his most comedic film. I also really liked The King of Comedy.
Oh, that's a brilliant film. I mean, Joker stole from it pretty blatantly.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Raging Bull is a very good movie. I've seen that twice, and I found that to be quite compelling. That's definitely in the top third. I'm scanning a list of all of his movies as we speak on Wikipedia, and I can't think of anything that I like less than The Irishman.
No.
I haven't seen a couple. I started watching Hugo and stopped watching it, so I can't really comment on Hugo. I haven't seen After Hours. I haven't seen Boxcar Bertha, you know, things like that. So
was that one of his early ones?
Yeah, 1972.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
Mean Streets. When I saw it, I didn't even really know who the guy was. I didn't know that he was the same guy who directed Taxi Driver. It just didn't register to me. So it's something I'd like to see again.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. I've always really liked that one. It was made even before The Godfather, so it's a very, I mean, every gangster film that's been made after The Godfather in some way imitates it. But that one, it's a little bit more, it's different because that mold hadn't been set yet. And it was based on, Scorsese's own memories, you know, things he went through in his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that he was from a crime family, but, you know, he lived in an Italian neighborhood in New York City and he knew people who were connected and so mm-hmm. forth. So you mentioned Goodfellas before. It's not my favorite either. I do like it a lot. I feel like he kind of redefined gangster films because the Godfather films, I mean, I think they're amazing. I don't want to say anything wrong about them, but anything bad about them, but I think they're Shakespearean in a way where the characters are almost a little too polished and a little too perfect in how they do things. And Scorsese kind of brought all that down to earth.
Yeah.
You know, in Goodfellas and showed these guys with all their flaws and imperfections and psychoses in some cases
he made them banal,
yeah,
but you know, horrifying at the same time, whereas the Godfather movies have a kind of grandeur to them that maybe these people don't really deserve, right?
Yeah.
To have ascribed to them. But Scorsese is now 76 or 77 years old. I guess he's 77. I do hope he continues to make films. I do hope he does good films. I kind of hope that the feeling of shuffling senescence that you have in this film, where just it's like Mr. Tudball taking forever to get anything done, is not going to be like a permanent feature of his work. I do hope he comes back and does more stuff. I mean, in the last 10 years, he has done some of his best work. There's no question about it. So it's not like he couldn't do that again.
Maybe he was constrained by having to do it for Netflix. I don't know, but
it's odd. I don't know why it would be a constraint. This is a case where I think a movie would have been better if it had more constraints, and specifically if it had the constraints of being something that was directed towards a theatrical release, because 3.5 hours or more is not a theatrically viable runtime. It's just too damn long. Now, he's right. Done a number of movies that have clocked in well over 2 hours and have been successful yes. in the theaters. But if Netflix, by giving him the ability to make a 3-hour and 40-minute film, I think they gave him enough rope to hang himself in a certain
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it would have been a much
some editing.
Yeah, it would have been a much better film if it had been an hour shorter, and it wouldn't have lost anything essential.
No, they should have taken out the whole JFK assassination part, in my yeah. opinion, but there's some other things that could go too.
Mm-hmm. You know, another film of his I've never seen is Bringing Out the Dead. I don't even know anything.
Oh yeah, it was okay. It's Nicolas Cage is a paramedic in driving an ambulance. It was okay, but I only saw it once, and I've never felt compelled to see it again.
Since 2002, okay, he's done Gangs of New York, which is one of his greats, The Aviator, which is a truly great film. And The Wolf of Wall Street, which is a fantastic film. Silence, which is a really very good film. And then he also did Shutter Island, which I find to be a somewhat flawed film, but utterly fascinating. It's a compelling film. It just doesn't exactly work, and it's sort of pretty damn bleak at the end. but it's still an ambitious, really first-rate piece of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I haven't seen it, I have to say.
Oh, that's definitely worth seeing, too. But yeah, so since 2002, he's made a lot of really good work, and I honestly think this is just going to be, you know, once he does his next film, I hope it's a return to form and people just sort of forget about The Irishman, because it's just too damn long to watch a second time.
Yeah, and not as good enough. Yeah. In my opinion, not good enough to hold my attention. I mean, there's some films like even Midsommar, which I talked about with Frode Midjord over the summer. It wasn't that good, but I want to see it a second time just to I know there's like some details and things that I missed. I don't really care in The Irishman. Even if I did miss something, it's probably not anything that's going to change my mind about the film. So I really don't feel any need to see it again.
Yeah, but I saw all the avocado and shag carpet and, you know, big sprawling 70s and 60s cars and people smoking cigarettes, et cetera, that I can take for a very long time. I got my fill. The whole feel of it, I just got my fill of that, definitely. I'm not going to revisit it.
But there is an aspect of the film we should probably talk about a little bit, which is the racial aspect. Because something that I pointed out in my review is that mafia films are pretty much the only genre of film today in which characters, or certainly white characters, can actually express either racist or even just racialist thoughts. And, you know, there is some of that in this film. It's not as extreme as some of the other mafia films that have been made. But, well, there's that scene, some of the UNS people, you know, people commenting on my review thought that I should have talked about this more, but that the reason I didn't was because it's really a very minor subplot in The Irishman. But, you know, there's that scene near the beginning when, Sheeran destroys is it a warehouse that belongs to these Jewish mobsters, and it's after Russell Bufalino, Joe Pesci's character, makes a number of disparaging comments about the, you know, those Jew gangsters and so on, but they don't actually even appear as characters in the film, and that's just sort of a segue into showing how Russell ends up taking Sheeran under his wing, but it doesn't end up being a major plot point. But it's interesting, I guess, in the sense that they allude to it at all, that there were Jewish gangsters, and also just the fact that the way that Joe Pesci talks about them in the film. But in addition to that, just the whole nature of mafia films is always about mafias based on various ethnicities in conflict with each other, which you could see as kind of an allegorical representation for America as a whole, which is, you know, various ethnic groups all competing with each other. And you really, I can't think of any other type of film where you can depict that today without getting into trouble.
Yeah, that is really true. That is a good point. And there's a level of just honesty in this film about hot button political topics that wouldn't be seen in a lot of other films.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good point. And that is something admirable about what Scorsese has done here. And it's admirable about his other gangster films, even more so, though. Think about Casino. The main character there is portrayed as a Jewish gangster. I remember it was Sergio Leone who said that as an Italian, he was sick and tired of Jews making movies about Italian gangsters. And as an Italian, he was going to even the score by creating a movie about the Jewish mafia instead. And I thought that was a kind of lovely sentiment, right?
You could get away with that in the 80s.
Yeah. And this is something that Scorsese does. I mean, Scorsese does talk about the Italian mafia, but in Casino, the main headline figure is a Jewish gangster.
Of course, probably the most notorious Jewish gangster is, what's his name? The character played by, he's played by an Italian. I'm talking about in Miller's Crossing. Bernie Birnbaum.
Bernie Birnbaum,
played by Tom Turturro. I mean, you know, who's like, you know, the like as you're fond of saying, I mean, if the film had been made out of the Goebbels Ministry of Propaganda, they wouldn't have changed anything. I mean, he's such a negative Jewish stereotype in that film.
Oh, yeah.
Which is made by two Jews.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's been some effort in that direction. But, well, of course, also in The Irishman, there's all those scenes with Hoffa himself talking about Italians in a very racist manner. But I mean, like I said in my review, I guess they can get away with that because he's talking about Italians.
Yeah, they're another white talk about
blacks or Hispanics or anything like that, or Scorsese would have probably gotten into
it. Hollywood can abide all kinds of inter-white ethnic stereotypes. The one thing they cannot abide is white ethnic solidarity. Going across those boundaries, or white racial solidarity. We're not going to see any of that anytime soon. But a German going on about you people, as he puts it, the Italians, that's totally representable by Hollywood these days. They don't have any problems with that.
No. Well, I also feel like the way that Scorsese can get away with the scenes where Harvey Keitel is referring to the Jew gangsters and everything is because, you know, we're supposed to understand that since these are gangsters, they're bad guys. So of course they're going to talk this way because they're bad and patriarchal and racist and everything else that the left hates. So, you know, since it's shown in the context of bad characters, it's considered okay.
Yeah, exactly. This is the code in Gangs of New York, where you have this spokesman for nativism. Who's Bill DeBusschere, who's an evil guy, right? So he can make claims that are very, very powerful because you understand that this is a bad person in the end and his views have been transcended and we're well rid of all this stuff now.
Right.
Well, exactly. John, we've been going on for about an hour and I think that this is a good discussion. The bottom line is The Irishman, for me, is one of Scorsese's lesser efforts. And I look forward to his next film, though, because I do think he's one of the greatest living filmmakers today. And he's done some truly great and visionary works. It's just this isn't one of them. And I hope that this is not the movie that we remember him by because it's the last of his career. That would be like, you know, remembering Hitchcock with Family Plot or something like that. It's not a good swan song. So Martin Scorsese, if you're listening to us, please do another film.
We want
that old magic back.
Yeah, I agree. Very much so. But, if there's anybody listening to this who hasn't seen it yet, I mean, if you've seen, go and watch all of Scorsese's other films. Go and see the Godfather films if you haven't seen those. Maybe watch the first couple of seasons of The Sopranos. Once you've done all that, then watch this because it might entertain you for a couple of hours, but you should watch the good stuff first.
Yeah, see the good
stuff that really set the mold.
Exactly. Okay, John, well, let's do this again soon, the next time we have another film to talk about, maybe another Scorsese film, although I think we should do it sooner than that.
Okay, yeah, sure.
All right, you take care.